Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Who needs Parkland Hospital? While many people think of the facility first as a place that treats poor and uninsured Dallas residents, Parkland is also the region's go-to trauma center, taking in more than half of all critically injured patients and the site of the only burn center in North Texas. It has repeatedly been listed on national best hospital lists, including the one issued by U.S. News and World Report, and lauded for both patient care and fiscal discipline. But Parkland's patient load has long since outgrown its facility, built in 1954. These days, the hospital admits more than twice as many patients as planners imagined half a century ago. So county leaders want to build a new Parkland hospital, one that meets modern design standards and offers about 300 additional beds. Dallas County voters will decide whether to spend the $747 million to do so in a November 4th bond election. And Dr. Ron Anderson, who is president and CEO of the Parkland Health and Hospital System, is here to talk about it. Dr. Anderson, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
What's the difference between the Parkland we have and the Parkland we need?
Well, the Parkland we have was very much a very modern hospital in 1954, and it was built in the days of wards, in the days of 12-foot Florida ceiling heights, and when we didn't have to worry so much about air and negative pressure and all of these superbugs and those kinds of things. Today, in a modern hospital, you have a 15-foot floor-to-ceiling height, and you've got air exchange systems behind the walls people don't see, cabling systems, fiber optics, and usually you have single-bed units to decrease infection control problems and medication errors and give people the privacy that the law demands, things we didn't even think about in 1954. When we've renovated our hospital, each time we've renovated three times already, we've had to bring things back to the code of today. And when we do, we lose 40% of the beds. So we've gone from a 982-bed hospital to a functioning 675-bed hospital because of codes. And one of the reasons we can't redo this hospital one more time is because of that. We can't afford to lose any more beds. We need extra capacity now.
So the decision was made that it's better to just sort of start from the ground up. Does the county already own the land that you would use for this?
The hospital district is a separate entity of county government, actually does own land across the street. We're going to try and acquire several more parcels of land, but we actually have the land that that we need for the majority of the building program over the next 30 years. We'll probably in time take down the current building, but we'll need it for 6 to 7 more years. So we have to get some mileage out of it, and we're actually still investing in it. We don't want to be guilty of being a slum landlord and not putting the money in to keep it really good shape. It's in good shape, but it's just not going to carry us into the future. But the land is there, and we can build a very good footprint for a hospital and a clinic that'll really be on the DART line, so it'll be very convenient for patients, for our employees as well. So it's well positioned for the future.
How would the actual construction, assuming that this passes, how would the actual construction and the moving be structured?
Well, we want to build this all in one fell swoop, if you will. We talked about doing it in stages, but with the raw materials being consumed by China and India and other world markets, we don't set that market anymore. And the cost of waiting is about 1% per month. So by building it all at one time and building it all in one phase, if you will, we can save well over $100 million by doing that. So part of this will be, planned over the next year, depending upon, of course, the bond election. But we'll be planning it, and we're planning it now. And we know the program, we know the size, we know the juxtaposition to the medical school, we know those things, but where final buildings will be and that sort of business will be drawn in the next year. We'll probably build in late 2009, 2010, and finish the project by 2014.
Is it possible to make a hospital that functions according to modern standards green?
Well, there are some really good hospitals around the world that have built what we call LEED-certified hospitals. We'd like to do that as well. Not only is it good for the environment, but it's also good for the pocketbook. It's good for the taxpayers. you can actually save substantial amounts of energy with new construction. And we think we probably can save energy cost in the 10 to 15% range. But importantly, too, nurses are aging. The average age of a nurse in Texas is 45 plus. And the hospital we have now is built on what's called the racetrack model. And nurses know what that means. It means they walk a long ways to get to the last patient on the ward. The way they're built and constructed now, you walk about a third the distance. So it's much more friendly to the nurses and the other employees as well as the families and the patients. So you can also construct it architecturally to require less staffing. And so all in all, new hospitals are so much more efficient than the hospitals of the 1950s era when we didn't think about the cost of energy nearly as much.
Dr. Ron Anderson is my guest. He's president and CEO of the Parkland Health and Hospital System. We're talking about plans for a new Parkland. Voters will decide this in the same election that they will decide a new president, new senator. That's the November 4th election. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's talk a little bit about construction costs, because $747 million is the bond issue, but there's also money coming from private sources. And in fact, Parkland has a cache of money waiting for this project.
Parkland has really turned itself around financially over the last 4 years. We've done very well. We have some cash reserves. About 4 or 5 years ago, we had 45 days cash on hand. We have 200 days of cash on hand now, which is what we should have. But we'll be able to contribute $250 million in current cash, $100 million in future cash from operations, and $150 million in philanthropic giving, we hope, so that we can buy down by $500 million the cost of the whole package, which is $1.271 billion. So we're asking for the taxpayers to support $747. And even there, there's a nuance. All the parking garages we're talking about building, $42 million worth, would be paid for by parking receipts, so we wouldn't be asking the taxpayers for that. So we've winnowed this down by the board's work and our chief financial officer's work down to $705 million in request. And so we're not coming asking for everything. We're coming and trying to pay for about 40-plus percent of this ourselves.
Are there actually revenue sources that you could take advantage of in a newer hospital that right now you just don't have space for or facilities for?
We have for many years given away a lot of our paying patients because our job is to care for the indigent sick of Dallas County and also to be there for potentially anyone for things like burns and trauma, neonatal intensive care, or sophisticated cancer care, those kinds of things. But as far as catering to a paying population, we really have given away, for example, physical medicine patients that we've saved their lives in a trauma situation, but we haven't been able to keep them for the rehabilitation and the reconstructive surgery. And we've given them to paying as paying patients to other hospitals. We hope to reverse that. We'd like to keep those patients, have a commitment to them, and see them all the way to the end of their care. And so that would be very, very helpful for us to be able to accomplish that. And that would help us pay for the project as well. Parkland provides about 61% of its budget from commercial insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, and other sources. Local taxpayers pay 39% of its operation. And when you add in our HMO, which has been extremely successful, the local taxpayers really just pay 29% of our total operation. So our commitment is to continue to try and be good enough. If something happens in the national election and we get universal health insurance, we'll have a hospital that can be converted to a more freestanding hospital and less support from local taxpayers. We hope that happens nationally, but we're not holding our breath. We still appreciate the gracious support we've had from Dallas County taxpayers.
If nothing changes, do you expect those ratios to stay about the same in a larger Parkland?
In a larger Parkland, we'll be caring for more patients, meeting the needs of the population. And in fact, we've talked to the other hospitals in town, and they've been very supportive of this building program because they, too, are providing charity care. And the charity care they provide is directly attached to what we do and how much we do. We've always done about half of the total amount of charity care in the community. For just one hospital, that's fantastic, and that's a huge amount. We want to continue to grow with the population and do that similar amount, but we still need the total industry-wide effort. And we've had great support from those hospitals, but it would be wrong not to expand our capacity. I will say, incidentally, there have been a lot of new hospitals built recently, very few new public hospitals. The ones that have been built, though, have downsized. Ours is one of the only ones in the last decade to actually expand capacity to meet the real needs of the community and not transfer this to the private sector. But this has happened in Chicago and L.A. County and other places where they've built maybe 70% or less of what they actually knew they needed. And we're not making that mistake in Dallas. We're planning for being a real partner with the private sector.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour is Dr. Ron Anderson of Parkland Health and Hospital System. Let's speak to Michelle in Dallas. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I have a question for Dr. Anderson. I was hoping you could explain to me a little bit about the policy that says Parkland will offer financial assistance to emergency patients who don't have insurance. However, they don't offer assistance to patients whose employers offer insurance, but the patient isn't even eligible for the insurance.
Okay, that's a very good question. And it's been a point of policy consideration that our board has considered a number of times. What this really relates to, some of the employees may not have access to it actually at the workplace. If they don't, then they would be qualified to get it. If the employer provides insurance and they could get it, they would not be qualified for tax-supported care. Now, both of us know that if you are poor, you're a low-income worker, and you're working in a place that provides insurance, but you can't afford it, then it's so out of reach because of cost that that's a catch-22. We've talked to our board, and we've proffered from the staff's point of view that maybe if someone spent more than 15% of their gross income on health care premiums, on insurance, that they could get some help in this regard. But that's been something we have not sold. We have not been able to get that policy changed. But we're working with private sector clinics out in the community, some faith-based clinics, to see if we can get those patients cared for there. And we do collaborate with a number of them. There are about 40 of them in the community. That's not the total answer because that's a volunteer system and it doesn't provide the same kind of medical home our clinics provide for people. But that's a huge, huge flaw in the system. Particularly with Dallas having 1 in 3 people uninsured in the city of Dallas, 1 in 4 people in the county of Dallas. And many of those people are uninsured not because their employer doesn't offer insurance, but because they can't afford it. So I do think this is something that needs to be revisited from a policy point of view.
An email from DW in Dallas says, while I'm normally against any tax increases, I feel that Parkland is a worthy institution. However, I'm troubled by the fact that only residents in Dallas County are funding Parkland, even though other counties benefit. What can we do to distribute the economic burden from those counties that benefit from Parkland?
That's a question that I'm asked almost every time I go out and speak on the bond election or any time I'm out. That comes up. Here's maybe the inside baseball skinny on this issue. 77% of the patients from out of county have a payer source. It may not be a sufficient payer source. It might be Medicaid, which doesn't pay cost, or Medicare, which barely covers cost. But it also allows us to bill the federal government for something called disproportionate share adjustments or upper payment limit adjustments on Medicaid to get a little bit higher payment. And those actually do bring in about $140 million a year in extra money to Parkland. And all in all, if we could close the door tomorrow to all out of county, we'd lose $14 million in marginal cost benefit. So we are getting paid, but not from those counties, which they should pay directly. We are getting help from the federal government and the state government.
We are talking about the future of Parkland Hospital with its president and CEO, Dr. Ron Anderson. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU continuing and professional education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about the past, present, and future of Parkland Hospital, which has a $747 million bond issue up for consideration November 4th. That would build a new hospital facility. My guest is Dr. Ron Anderson, president and CEO of the Parkland Health and Hospital System. If you want to join us, you can email think at kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. Wes asks, does Parkland anticipate awarding the design of the hospital to a single architectural firm or share this large project with several of the large firms in town that have a high level of healthcare expertise?
We certainly want folks, Wes, with high levels of expertise in this regard. We've made a real commitment also, though, to the building program to use women and minority-owned businesses. We're looking for a 30% share in there. They may be subs and working with the bigger firms, but we're going to try our best also to accomplish that goal. But I suspect we'll have several different firms working together in this regard. And we're going to have a blended approach to this with an in-house team, but we'll also use a project management concept that will save the district about 20-some-odd million dollars. And we look at that as a new cancer center for our patients. But we do think that the bandwidth will require us to use multiple firms and also use this project management kind of concept. And so the board has looked at this. They're going to vote on it this month. And then we'll be out actually on the street with RFPs to accomplish that goal. We're waiting, obviously, for the bond election before we do that. It'd be a little presumptuous for us to do anything like that, but we are doing program design now with a firm called Carlsberger, a firm that's helped us with the size, the juxtaposition, the synergies that we need. But then the architectural firms and the construction management teams will come on later.
Any talk of adding to the Dallas jewel box of architecture with a sort of world-famous architect, or is that an extravagance that you would consider to be a waste of money?
Well, I would love to see this be something that's beautiful, something that's also very functional. I want it to be a healing place. The current hospital is very industrial, as you know. It served us extremely well, but there's very few places for people to meditate or to pray or, the chapel's very small, those kinds of things. We need some family-centered architecture. We need a place, and new hospitals typically feel like a healing place. We want a place that's going to be environmentally friendly. And so that's important. We think we can do that and also build in some extra surge capacity. While the rooms are single occupancy, there's no reason we can't put two head walls in case we have an F5 tornado or a pandemic flu, something like that, where the operational costs won't increase, but we could respond in times of crisis. So we're trying to do some very, very unique things. We want the emergency room to be built under a concept called Emergency One, just like Air Force One, so that we can convert it to military use if we have to in times of terrorism. So a lot of things will go into thinking about how this hospital can best be used, but the most important is that it will be flexible. It can grow up or grow out for a 30-year span and not be as constrained as it currently is. It's bound now and can't grow.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to David in Dallas. Hi, David.
Hey, I work at the other Level 1 Trauma Center here in Dallas. I'm sure you can figure out which one that is, Doc.
Being a Baptist, I might give a clue there.
Well, here's my comment. In talking to patients' families, some of the patients, other coworkers that I work with, I think one of the challenges that this whole issue is going to have, and I'm sure this probably won't be news to you, is some people's reluctance and disaffection to the idea of spending a whole lot more money on a place that, whether it's right or wrong or true or not, that a lot of people feel like takes care of our undocumented and illegal workers that exist here in Texas. What's been your experience with that, and how do you deal with that situation as it exists? I mean, I hear it at least through half of the people that I talk to, not just, patients' families, definitely other healthcare workers, that I work with, at my hospital.
Well, David, I would first of all compliment your hospital because it has a a policy of caring for a lot of poor people and taking care of people based on how they're injured or sick. And I think that's our first goal. I've always tried to keep our doctors out of being an INS agent. They are good doctors. Our nurses are good nurses, social workers, good social workers. And taking care of really sick people with all of the social problems that we have to contend with is tough enough without trying to get into doing the federal government's job. I would tell you personally, I would love to see immigration reform. I'd love to see it at the border or at the workplace. Most of the people who come to us for health care are here because of jobs, and the vitality of this community is one of the reasons they come here. Probably one of the reasons also we have a vital community, a robust community, because they are here. That would be argued quite a bit by lots of people. But when I tell people we do care for them in emergencies, I also mention that our clinic system takes care of them as well. When we don't have to, 98% of the women who deliver at Parkland got prenatal care, so they weren't here just to drop in, get a baby, and go across the border again just to have an American citizen. They were here working with their spouses, and basically the pregnancy was cared for throughout the pregnancy. And then we get $300 of prenatal care, avoiding hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of NICU care, NICU care. You know, we do immunizations. We want herd immunity for our children. We don't want polio back in this country or whooping cough and that sort of thing. We treat the tuberculosis in these folks, and if they're working as a domestic worker or a restaurant worker, probably people want that. But most importantly, they also want us to keep them out of the emergency room if we can by providing an alternative, which is $60 a visit versus 350 or 60 a visit in the emergency room, so we don't gridlock the emergency room. So when they come in with a trauma or a stroke or a heart attack, we can get to them promptly. And when people think about that, sometimes they really realize that it's in everyone's best interest to provide the care. And I know since you're working in a Baptist organization, you probably would pay attention to both Old and New Testament that tells us to take care of the widows and the orphans and the laborers in their wage, and also care for the stranger in your land because you once were strangers in a foreign land, i.e. Egypt. So it's interesting, a lot of the folks who tell me these things and are very offended by us caring for the undocumented are people of strong religious fervor, and they just need to read the same book.
Are there any plans to expand the capacity of satellite clinics with this bond issue?
This bond issue doesn't address the actual expansion of our clinic system, which now has 11 fully comprehensive community-oriented primary cares. We will build four more or five more. We'll build two that really have subspecialty care because we're finding the more primary care we do, the more we actually need subspecialty care. And Texas, by the way, is short on doctors, not just primary care doctors, but we have 192 doctors per 100,000. And most places have about 250 plus per 100,000. So we're short on trauma surgeons. We're short on neurosurgeons, orthopedic surgeons, and certainly primary care. So we want to provide access to folks, and we're going to build in four more high-need areas and also try to provide subspecialty support and take those bottlenecks for subspecialty care, which turns out to be one of the reasons people go to emergency rooms, because they can't get in the community what they need beyond primary care. So we're going to do that. That'll be paid for with ongoing cash from operations. The board has agreed to that. That's been part of the strategic plan. And very, very importantly, we'll start covering some areas out in the suburbs where the poor have been moved to through a process of gentrification. That's happened all over the country. In fact, this is the first year that more people live in poverty in suburbs than in inner cities. So we have to change, and we have to move out, really, to take care of this population.
We're talking about future plans for Parkland Hospital with CEO Dr. Ron Anderson. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's speak next to Ryan in Dallas. Hey, Ryan.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Dr. Anderson, I saw a special that was on KERA a couple of years ago about you talking about when Parkland was really in debt, and it I think it was in 04, it was going to cost the taxpayers, if a bond had passed, $11 per taxpayer to bail the hospital out. How much, if this bond goes through, how much will it cost the taxpayers per person if it goes through?
That's a good question, Ryan. I think that back then we were talking about a $1.3 billion bond campaign. And I believe it was more than the $11 you mentioned. It was substantially more, I believe. One reason we're asking for $747 is that our board chair and others looked at the current economy, looked at what's going on, and said, let's pay for as much as we can as a down payment. And so we've done that, and we've gotten down to $747. And so I think that it's going to be about $35 for the owner of a home of $140,000. That's the average home now. So it's about $35.
That's per year.
That's per year. But it expands the capacity of the hospital substantially. So this isn't for current operations. In fact, we're doing very well currently with our finances. But by expanding substantially to meet the growth of the community, we're going to do a whole lot more work. And so basically that $35 is buying new services and not just undergirding or subsidizing what we were doing. We haven't gone to the voters since 1980, and we are debt-free, and we're sitting on some cash reserves that allow us to buy down this obligation. So we're trying to do what would be necessary and be as frugal as possible so this has the least impact. The poor actually pay taxes. Many poor people who don't have health insurance do own their homes. And, you can't tax your way out of a problem. So we've spent the last 4 years getting our financial house in order. And so that's really, I guess, the gist of this.
Can you talk about what you changed in order to go from operating at a loss for some time to now being completely in the black?
Parkland actually had 1 year since 1982 where we actually had a loss. And that loss was precipitated by the federal government's bill. It was called the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, and they took $86 million in revenue away in 1 year. So we always had a bottom line, but not necessarily a bottom line that would let us build for the future. So that was one of the problems. And so we had growth in Dallas County, and while the tax rates didn't grow, the tax growth came from the base growing. So we were very, very well treated by this community, and so we've been treated graciously. Our tax rate also absorbed the jail, which is now $31 million a year, and we didn't get new taxes for that, and we've absorbed that. So we've tried to be pretty frugal in operations, but part of it was getting bills passed in Washington that allowed us to get local taxes matched. The local taxes we get, about $400 million a year, are about $550 million is what we do in charity care cost. So about $150 million a year I have to find someplace else. And that's been through disproportionate share adjustments and upper payment limit adjustments, bills we got passed on trauma, bills we got passed in Washington that helped pay for the illegal or the undocumented person during the first 48 hours of care. Piecing it all together like a patchwork quilt, it's really scary because if we lost one of those programs, that would be devastating. And we fight every year in Washington to keep those things going. And this year, for example, Senator Hutchison helped us a great deal with getting $30 million back that was rightly ours from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. So it's a constant battle, and you're fighting it. And operations, though, had to also be good. We're collecting about $32 to $34 million a month in patient collections. And so that's more than Parkland ever has done before. And our cash position actually improved this year $38 million from last year. So a lot of this is about doing good business practices as well as being on top of things from a legislative point of view.
The other thing that we should point out that some people are not aware of is the fact that even patients who don't have health insurance, who are very low income, receive a bill and are at the outset at least expected to attempt to pay that bill. It's not as if people walk in and know that they'll never be responsible financially for the care that they've received.
We don't believe that there is such a thing as free care. If the taxpayers don't pay for it, then in the private hospital, cross-subsidy pays for the uninsured. There's no free lunch, really. Somebody's always paying, and it's a very unfair way to pay for things in this country. It'd be far better to have a universal approach to funding everybody. And then, again, if that were the case, then we might be able to give back our local taxes and just earn our way. But there are some people under 200% poverty who will be helped quite a bit by Parkland. They'll pay very small copays and sliding scale copays. But if you're from out of county, for example, we use an engine called Search America to find out what your resources are. This last year, we've prosecuted over 200 people who were fraudulent. They weren't poor. They had assets. And On the other hand, if somebody did come in, you know, who needed our services from out of county, who really truly are poor, then we know we're not going to get very much there, and that becomes charity. But we still expect them to pay, and we ask their counties to pay. We would love to see regionalization occur, cross-jurisdictional funding for things that are very, very important. We've got to convince these other counties that that's important to them too. And as we build bills sufficient for the volume of patients that come here from those out of counties, while we found a way to get the federal government to help pay for that, it would be far, far better for us to be working and planning jointly with those other counties and not seeing us as the enemy because we're asking them to pay. We're trying to find a win-win situation with them. We think we could get the money matched for them as well, and they could build infrastructure and they could work in their own solution, could maybe come from that money. So we're working across those things to also decrease that burden.
Dr. Ron Anderson of Parkland Hospital is my guest. Let's speak next to Sammy in Southlake. Hi, Sammy.
Hi. First of all, thank you, Doctor, for what you do. I sincerely believe that our community is blessed to have people of your energy and experience doing the job you do for us.
Thank you.
I was going to ask the immigrant question, but that Baptist guy beat me to it, so I'm going to ask you another question. We have 5,000 deaths a year among children for acute asthma. We're the only nation in the world that has that kind of death rate. How are you guys reaching out to better educate mothers and children on maintenance therapy versus acute therapy?
We're working a lot with Children's Medical Center. We have a long time. We merged our services with them in 1994. There's a remarkable woman over at the medical school named Rebecca Grishala. She's an MD, PhD. She's done some work, for example, in West Dallas working with the Latino population, and they've actually gone in, got rid of house mites and cockroach antigen and that sort of thing, decreasing the asthma work in the emergency room by and admissions, both at Parkland and Children's, by 50%. But it took a holistic approach to this, not just good in providing good medicine. We had to also provide good environments for these children. And in our clinic system, we do those same kind of preventive interventions all the time now. And a lot of times it's education as well. But keeping these kids in school, you know, is also an important thing, and not keeping them in the hospital.
Back in just a moment with Dr. Ron Anderson, President and CEO of Parkland Health and Hospital System. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, and history start weekly, a part of SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. I'm here this hour with Dr. Ron Anderson, President and CEO of the Parkland Health and Hospital System, which has a $747 million bond package up for consideration November 4th. Voters will decide whether or not to build a new Parkland hospital close to the location of the one that exists right now. If you want to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. And that is where we find Jackie in Paradise. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I am a physician that went to Southwestern Medical School and rotated through Parkland Hospital. I've always admired Dr. Anderson's passion for teaching as well as patient care. And one thing he hasn't touched on is the critical importance of Parkland as a teaching hospital in producing really quality physicians for our community. If he would like to comment on that.
Thanks for your call.
Jackie, thank you. At one time, years ago, Parkland trained 72% of all the doctors that practice in Dallas, and even places like Paradise, I suppose. But right now, it's actually drifted down to 55% for a very good reason. And that's because Texas had tort reform a few years ago, and many doctors actually moved to Texas as kind of the promised land, hoping that that would be a better place to practice. But 55% of the doctors in the community here trained on our campus. So when people tell me, you know, I don't know if I'll ever use Parkland, my doctors at Baylor or my doctors at Presbyterian or Methodist or Children's, a lot of times I can actually say that you know, I ask them who they are, and they'll tell me. I said, well, I remember the year that that person was chief resident, and the year that they rotated on my service, and they were wonderful docs, and on and on. But I think that the quality of health care in this entire community is tied to UT Southwestern in a major way. And I think that we benefit from that a great deal in the other hospitals in town because they use the product, if you will. And here's one of the things I'm really concerned about. Texas is expanding the number of slots in medical schools in each of the medical schools in the state, trying to fix that gap I mentioned about not having enough doctors. They're not actually expanding the number of graduate medical education slots, the residency slots, as well. And if you train in Texas in a medical school and you do your residency in Texas, you have an 80% chance of practicing in Texas. If you leave the state of Texas to get an internship or residency, your chances are about 50-50 that you'll come back. And so we spend all the money in educating the medical students, and we need places like Parkland for people to be trained, and that's extremely important. And so, you know, I appreciate Jackie's question a great deal. We train about 41 different types of people out there, nurses, pharmacists, allied health, all kinds of folks working with three nursing schools, working with a number of others. And it's critically important that we continue to do that. We have a great working relationship with the community colleges here that have been very supportive of training people. So those kinds of things go on a lot of times out of sight, and people don't think about them. But the quality of health care is tied a great deal to all the teaching hospitals in our community.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll speak next to Diane in Richardson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Dr. Anderson, I'm a healthcare provider myself. I'm a respiratory therapist, and I've been over to Parkland. I worked at St. Paul, and I do agree that this bond is needful. I think that in the while we're in the midst of this financial crisis, there may be some voters that are going to be wondering about what type of compensation package you yourself may have, and you know how wide the gap is between, say, what your earnings are compared to, say, an allied healthcare professional, and if you could be candid and help, you know, the voters to understand that this should not be anything that would, you know, detract from voting for this bond.
That would be fine. My salary is always published in the Dallas Morning News and other places every year, so I'm not too sensitive about it, and nor very apologetic about it, because our board has been gracious to me and they've treated me well over the years. But my salary is $577,000. It's about five to one or something like that for what a allied health person would make, or four to one. In corporate America, CEOs make sometimes 200 and 300 to one. Parkland's a little bit different than that. It's and most of my senior executives make in the market. I've been very careful to try to recruit people that would be as good as anybody in any other hospital in town. My salary is probably about half of the market rate for somebody running a hospital of our size. I knew that when I went into this because it's a public hospital. But if I were in a nonprofit hospital, my salary would be easily $1 or $1.2 million. And I've been offered that before to go elsewhere. But there's no place I could be which would be as productive for me as Parkland. No place I could be where I could have taught, where I could have seen patients throughout the years, and also be involved in health policy, and then do what I do. So to me, my total compensation was a whole lot more than money, and still is a whole lot more than money. I think it's important to pay people well and pay people well who are down in the organization. I agree with you.
So you don't want people working for you who are sort of discount employees. You want people to be at parity.
Well, I want to have them at parity. We do all kinds of market surveys to be sure that's the case, particularly my COO, CFO. There's very little gap between me and my CFO and my COO and my CMO. Why? Because we're a team, and we work together as a team. And so it's not a 2-to-1 at all. It's probably about a 70% ratio. And I'm very comfortable with that. I think that's the right thing to do. That's not the model in corporate America. That's not the model in other hospitals.
Since you've already tipped your hand a little bit about the election and what you might hope to happen, maybe you can weigh in for us about, from your perspective, how your patients would be affected by either a McCain health care plan or an Obama health care plan.
Well, we obviously as public employees haven't endorsed anyone at all, but I've been involved at the national level quite a bit in having these kinds of discussions. And one of the things I do hope will happen is that we hopefully there's a bill out there by Senator Hatch and Senator Wyden, which would use national public radio and national television to have town hall meetings so that over a year's time, they could do a study and find out what people really want, kind of like we do in the community, in our community clinics, and then actually have a group, a nonprofit group, come together pretty much like the Federal Reserve and formulate something to give to Congress to see if we can't get bipartisan support. Both of these gentlemen are at least doing more than what we currently do today. One depends on the marketplace, Senator McCain, and tax credits, which I think probably for the very poor that I care for would not solve the problem. We see Senator Obama trying to push toward universal coverage. The question is about affordability. So when I've looked at these, I've said, you know, we need more than insurance. Just focusing on insurance isn't sufficient. We need infrastructure. We need people. We need to educate people. We need to also change our demand curve. We need to use less of things that don't work very well. We need to use evidence-based practice. And I think that's really, really, really critical. And we need more care management than managed care. And what that means is that chronic diseases, 10% of the people cost 80% of the money. And so if we really focus on them, and we have programs at Parkland where we can decrease hospitalization for congestive heart failure by 50%, for asthma by 50%, diabetes complications, on and on, HIV/AIDS. We need to apply what we know in an evidence-based way, and we won't use as much, and that there will have more money. But we also need to decrease the 24% of American medicine costs that come for administrative overhead, decrease that down. And there's a lot of money left in the system to care for people who are poor. And so I'm one who believes if we had universal coverage, the marketplace might then work. But without universal coverage, that won't work. And coverage alone doesn't mean providership. For example, in Texas, only 38% of doctors will take a new Medicaid patient. And that's kind of an insurance, but it doesn't pay very well. So until we get universal health insurance that actually pays well, that won't be the total answer. So I'm looking for more comprehensive responses than right now I see in the election discussion. I hope that they'll come to that broader discussion that the Senate and House are trying to put together, particularly the Senate, to have a national debate about this and to come up with something that's bipartisan and not something that's so polar.
Let's go next to San Diego and talk to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi. My question, having firsthand witnessed what the level and quality of HIV and AIDS care for the general public can be in a city like San Diego, the Owens Clinic, which is associated with UCSD in California, what is your level of commitment to highly increasing the level of AIDS and HIV care, which is not available through that Amelia Court Clinic that is associated with UCSD? Southwestern, given UT Southwestern's high level of respect in many, many other fields, it seems uncoordinated, literally unfriendly, and unhygienic upon visitation and exploration of the services there, which I have done firsthand to compare the two cities. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
I haven't been, I'm at a disadvantage, I haven't been to your clinic in San Diego. I've visited a number of these in Chicago and San Francisco and some other places. And we certainly have an old building, but I don't think that's what you're talking about. I think you're talking about, the number of physicians or allied health personnel or whatever. We actually have about 60% of all the current persons in Dallas County living with HIV/AIDS in that clinic. We also have clinics out in the community in places where people want to go in a more family-oriented type of situation. Many of the women and children pairs who have HIV would prefer that sort of setting. And so we actually have three or four more clinics besides the one that you actually saw. It is crowded. It is old. It will be in for a major repair. But we feel good about the fact that we're providing a lot of care for HIV/AIDS patients. We've been an advocate for them. We provide their pharmaceutical services, and that's very, very expensive. We're working with the school to improve coverage there. We've seen some change and some turnover. We're looking for big things to happen there. We'd like to have this be a center of excellence. We have the AETC grant, and it's basically an education center for three states, and that's also, I think, going well. And so we're actually trying to be a leader in that regard, and if we have catch-up, then we need to have catch-up. But I think that here's a disease for 1% or 2% of the population we're dealing with that consumes 6% of our budget. So if you think we haven't made a commitment, I think you're in error.
I have a question here from Dimitri about what would happen with the existing hospital, I guess, once the new one would be built.
Well, the old hospital served us well, and it might be able to be adapted to new use as an outpatient facility or a diagnostic facility. But because of its limitations from the point of view of a loss of beds, if we renovate it, it's not going to be effective for staffing as an inpatient facility. There are people on our board who like to have an implosion party once its days are over as a utility facility so that they can in the future use that space to build another hospital, say, in 30 years. And like a farmer rotating crops, we would go across the street and back and forth. Mainly, we want to stay in close juxtaposition to the medical school. Very, very important that that be the case. We can't get too far away. Our doctors are coming from there. We're going to put more teaching facilities in the new hospital. We're going to have more doctor's offices in the hospital because we don't want to waste their time walking back and forth mile, you know. So, but the facility also could be put to good use if we could get a partner, say, for example, the state of Texas to come in and help us with a local psychiatric facility. It could be renovated to some use of that sort to meet an important need in the community. But right now, we don't want to spend a whole lot of money on repairs. Boiler plants, things of that sort, which would be necessary. And we're hoping to get through the next 6 or 7 years and have it finish out its life in great service and not cost a lot of money. But we know there's about $120 million worth of cost that would occur if we tried to keep that facility going. So its best use may also be the land underneath it, which could help children grow, children's. And we're working with Children's Strategic Plan, with the Medical School Strategic Plan, and all of us are coordinating all of our efforts out there to make that clinic system and the whole campus work together. We all need to be sure we don't have rough edges on our strategic plans that we bump into.
Have you been over to the newly renovated, very old Parkland Hospital that is now an office space?
One of the things I'm very proud of, is that that building still survived. The Dallas Historical Society, and others were very concerned about that, but it's very important. Harlan Crowe's people and Crowe Holding have done a magnificent job in that building, and I'm so proud of them. I can't tell you. I don't know if I'd have a buyer like that for the 1954 vintage.
Dr. Ron Anderson is president and CEO of the Parkland Health and Hospital System. If you're registered to vote in Dallas County, you can cast a ballot November 4th on whether or not to build a new Parkland. Dr. Anderson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.